Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for September 24th, 2017. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
All right, big show tonight. Going to have Martin Weinberg of Alabama coming on the show. And Alabama, they've made just a little bit of political news the past few days, or at least a little bit of political news has come from there. So Martin will be on to talk about some of that. We're actually going to get into some of it, but really not the – it was what was said in Alabama, not anything much about Alabama other than it's just one of our 50 states here in a minute. But generally, it was real funny. The first part of this week, I was like, yeah, it's been kind of a quiet week. And then about midweek hit, and let's just say there's a little bit to talk about. So let's kind of start out with Friday night and what came all day long today. And it's not just about football, but it's just so many things. Donald Trump during his rally for Luther Strange, trying to get Luther Strange elected, you know, did a big rally in Huntsville. He talked about these SOBs, and I'll say that. I'll clean it up. That won't stand for the flag. And, of course, the main one is Colin Kaepernick, who currently doesn't play in the NFL. And one of the more ironic things is, of course, he was calling this lady, I think her name's Teresa Kaepernick, the B word, and she's an adoptive mother. I mean, she adopted Colin Kaepernick. I mean, somebody probably we think's really a good person, you know, doing that and raising him, formative years of his life, no matter how you feel about what he's doing now. But yet she got called that by the president of the United States. States actually tweeted it out in pride that she got called that. Figured she must be doing something right then. And it just has unleashed a firestorm. And I guess we can talk about the NFL part of it first. It seems like almost every player, almost every owner is doing something if you consider, you know, standing locked arm in arm, because that's not the traditional, anthem stance. Some folks didn't even come out for the anthem, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Titans, and there was one other team, the team playing the Titans, maybe the Seahawks. Those three teams didn't even come out. Some owners, including Atlanta's Arthur Blank, locked arms. And I think it was over 150 players through the 1 o'clock games actually knelt. And so all these players are doing exactly what Donald Trump criticized. And the number one takeaway is they're doing it because they want to show they stand against Donald Trump. Catherine, I know you're not our biggest sports fan of the three of us, but this has become a political issue because most of these players are African-American, and there seems to be, whether Donald Trump wants to admit it, a racial component to this. What's your thoughts?
Well, I have to say that I've always been uncomfortable with the Pledge of Allegiance. It's always been a problem for me. I think it's I'm not crazy about pledging allegiance to a flag or to a country for that matter. I think it's an uncomfortable stance for me as a member of a democratic society. I'm not crazy about it, but I do it. I pause and don't say the under God part. It's my only way of sort of protesting the whole thing. But I think it's really interesting that the president would criticize athletes for not saying the pledge, and or for kneeling during the pledge and during the anthem, and then not call out the, you know, white supremacists and calling them good people after the Charlottesville, you know, whatever you want to call that protest, you know, rally, whatever. I just think there's this really mixed message coming out of our president, and it's very divisive and very I just think the whole thing is very tone deaf, I guess is the word, the phrase. It was all over the morning news this morning, the Sunday morning shows. They talked about it for probably a half hour on Meet the Press and a little less than that on the Stephanopoulos show. A lot of people are really outraged by it. I think I'm proud of our athletes and their teams for rallying together in support of free speech and, you know, a quiet protest, quiet, peaceful protest.
Yeah, Tim, you know, this thing was really something that happened last year, and there was some, you know, pretty honestly, a pretty small number of players. It didn't seem like an issue that was continuing to go on, and Donald Trump has this rally for Luther Strange, trying to help Luther Strange get elected. No one's talking about Luther Strange, certainly outside of Alabama, and I'm not even sure they're talking about him there. Did he really miss his objective going off thesis so bad and completely shifting the attention to something that probably fires up Roy Moore's base a little better?
Well, Trump's aim there was twofold. One of them, Catherine mentioned, I think she had seen some talk about it on the morning shows, and there's been a lot of talk about it on the social media that Trump, that's the way, drumming up something controversial, saying something off the wall, is a way to change the subject. And with the impending defeat that he's about to experience once again in Congress on the number one thing he said he was going to get done, which was repeal Obamacare on day one, January 20th. Seems like a long time ago now when you talking about doing something in one day. And so he certainly changed the subject the other night, didn't he? Another thing he wanted to do, of course, is to fire his base up, and it certainly did that. Again, I was looking around quickly the social media early this morning, and his most ardent supporters were falling in line and saying, you know, let's boycott the NFL and blah, 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 blah. Not all of them were doing that, though. Some people I knew that were Trump supporters were saying, heck no, I'm watching football, and, you know, Donald Trump and everybody else is just going to have to get over it. But I'm with you on something, David. Why does he just keep dredging up these things? Is this just the way this guy is? I mean, Colin Kaepernick is out of football, and he's probably out of football because of what he did. Well, doesn't that mean Trump got his way? So what is his problem that he just keeps on and keeps on and keeps on and keeps on? He's beginning to, like, the a lot of those team owners are probably pro-Trump. You know that New England's owner, Kraft, is, and he didn't have very nice things to say about Trump today either. But on and on and on and on. Why pick a fight with the NFL? I know it's political, but why them? Because he's asking players for a fight, and they're going to give him one, looks like. So, you know, we haven't even gotten to ESPN blasting Trump, although you did mention Rex Ryan. And
that was
Golden
a pre-show.
We ain't got to that either, so.
I hadn't gotten to the basketball either. One thing I'll say is honestly, And I don't think, you know, Colin Kaepernick's one of the best 20 quarterbacks, say, walking the planet today. But I think his odds of getting a job are actually much better after Friday night than they were before. But let's not delve too deep into sports here. One thing about Donald Trump is some people are saying the reason he's picked this fight is because back when he was the owner in the USFL, he wanted to sue the NFL. I think he won a grand total of $1 in that lawsuit. And then he tried to buy the Buffalo Bills. The owners voted him down. He lost that election. Wish he'd lost one more recently. But and so, therefore, he may actually want to pick a fight with the NFL, because if he can somehow, in his mind, hurt the NFL, then that's one on his enemies list. In some ways, I think this guy does have an enemies list, you know, much like the Nixon administration. Catherine or Tim, have you heard that postulated about Donald Trump's past battles or trying to get in and getting denied with the NFL?
I haven't heard anything about that, but, you know, I don't follow sports that closely. I was just watching that. Sort of interested because of the pledge and because of the, you know, it's just the diversion. I think it's a good diversion tactic away from healthcare and the other things that he's losing.
I do know.
Tim, have you heard that?
Yeah, I do know that he's had a past conflict with the NFL. I mean, he had a lot of money invested in the USFL and his New Jersey Generals, and he had given to Herschel Walker what at the time was a lot of money at the time. And when the league folded, he wasn't happy. He did blame the NFL. He did sue them under the antitrust provisions, and although he technically won, the jury pretty much told him what they thought of that by awarding him the lowest amount of money available, which was $1. So, he is the kind of guy that would hold a grudge. We know that. He is the kind of guy that would use his position, even as president, to even the score. And we have seen that, too. I mean, if he just goes about and casually fires the head of the FBI and fires this person and fires that person and mouths this foreign leader and insults that foreign leader, he has no qualms at all about picking a fight with, I mean, not just a league, not just a sport, but individuals in that sport, calling them out by name on Twitter when he's at his 3 a.m. bathroom break. What is it about that guy that makes him want to do that? My goodness.
No idea. I just don't, because I want to get into that larger point about things that unify us and how those are going away, but I don't think we can get there yet. Let's talk about the people he's lost. Rex Ryan. On the morning show,
yeah. He
got virtually no support on the sports morning shows. Rex Ryan, who introduced him to a Buffalo rally, supported him, just came out and blasted him, said that he didn't support this in any way, shape, or form. Bob Kraft, the number one supporting owner in the NFL of him, who gave him a Super Bowl ring, which is unprecedented, and I don't care who the politician and who the team is, those rings should be for the team, not for somebody that's, you know, just a politician. And like I said, that goes across party and team lines in my mind on that. And all these people are coming out against him saying this was just unnecessarily divisive. So he's losing his base there, if you will. Let's move into the NBA part of this, because this is what really makes it more of a racial thing, and I think Chris Cizilla of CNN pointed this out in an article he wrote. He also took the time on Twitter just after the rally, like the next day, to uninvite Stephen Curry and essentially the entire Golden State Warriors team who won the NBA title. And if you looked at NBA players and said, you know, who really looks, whatever – Trump doesn't like in sports or whatever, Stephen Curry would not be your poster boy. He's pretty you know, middle America, middle class. I think he was raised, born and raised in North Carolina, two-parent home, all this stuff. And even because the Warriors said they're going to get together and vote as a team when they play the Wizards, are they going to go to the White House? I mean, it sounded like they probably weren't. But he uninvited them. And people are saying, well, you know, if there is a league that is affiliated or is more closely in the minds of people thought to be more of a black and African-American league, it is in the NBA. And he, you know, calls them out, and there's nobody kneeling in that sport. That sport's not even in season right now. And LeBron James, the number one star in that sport, actually called him a bum on Twitter. Didn't really mince words like Jemele Hill did, just called him a bum. And so now he's picked a fight with another league and given this whole thing a whole nother layer. Catherine, what are your thoughts on the second part of all this?
I don't know what to think about it. Like, it's so stupid. And so, so my original thought is it's just beneath the presidency. Like, why is he wasting his time talking about this? Of all the things that he could be talking about, all the things that have happened this week with healthcare, with North Korea, with, you know, the hurricanes, with climate change, all these other things, he's talking about whether or not the team that won the NBA Finals is coming to the White House. They don't come. What? So what? I just think it's another diversionary tactic. He doesn't want to talk about climate change, of course. He doesn't want to talk about the health care bill because he thinks it's going to lose, and that's a loser, and he doesn't want to talk about losers. And he doesn't want to talk about North Korea because he made a fool of himself. So there you go. So I'll talk. So he'll talk about
just attack American citizens, attack icon. Yeah, I mean, because a lot of kids, a lot of adults look up to Stephen Curry. You know, they're probably just going, you know, say, oh, well, firemen and teachers and police and whomever should be looked up to more. But we do know kids look up to athletes, and that's just how it is. He takes this chance to attack. Tim, your thoughts on the NBA side of this, which was completely, honestly, the NFL part of it was kind of an unwarranted, out-of-nowhere attack, but the NBA was even more so. What's going on there?
Here's what Trump tweeted. Going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Stephen Curry is hesitating. Therefore, invitation is withdrawn. Of course, LeBron James responded by saying going to the White House was a great honor until you showed up. He is not just taking on, as you know, David, being a follower of the NBA that you are. He's not just taking on players. He's taking on, like, the very top of the line models on this planet of players. People all over the world. You could go to a street in Beijing and half the young people there would recognize photographs of LeBron James, for crying out loud. Did you ever believe that you would see something like this from a president of the United States tweeting like a teenager or something, arguing with their boy or girlfriend on Twitter?
Now, Tim, be careful.
In the middle of the night, and
before
he's the president of
insult teenagers. You're about to insult teenagers there. If you start comparing them to Donald Trump's behavior.
He's a 71-year-old man acting like a kid.
I'm not gonna put a bow on it because we'll probably come back, but I'm gonna put a pin in it real quick, so we can welcome in our guests. But I'm gonna have the last little final word for now on this. Stephen Curry's poorly selling tennis shoes still probably outsell Ivanka's clothing line. and those of you that are familiar with both clothing items, call Tim Gunn, since I just learned his name last week. But I want to welcome in our guest from many times, our expert from Alabama. Welcome back to the show, Martin Weinberg.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Oh, doing good. Well, your state, Alabama, is not seen as the most competitive state in the union. It is not the most purple of purple states. But it has been in the news more in the past few weeks. It's probably the hotbed of politics now for several reasons. It's not just that special election, but let's start there. You got a runoff. Luther Strange, the incumbent, and the guy everybody else knows, former Chief Justice Roy Moore, suspended Chief Justice Roy Moore.
Sure.
What's going on with that race?
Well, it was a real heated primary. There were the two of them, and then Mo Brooks, who's the congressman from the Huntsville area, and in Alabama, I guess most of the southern states, we still have primary runoffs. So if you don't get 50% plus one, then you've got to go into a runoff. And so Moore was leading, and I just saw the numbers, but after the first round, I think he had maybe 35%, and Strange had, right around 30, and everybody else. Brooks was probably the next. Definitely the next high, maybe about 20 or maybe a little bit more than that. So, it's been interesting. Both of them have a lot of baggage. Roy Moore has been removed twice as the Chief Justice, and Luther Strange, he's – the way he was appointed, a lot of people think is suspect because Bentley appointed him, and they were no great friends or political allies, and – the question's been to the offer something in terms of Bentley getting off the hook a little bit easier and for that appointment. Was there some kind of quid pro quo? And I don't think anything wanted to come of that, but the perception's there. So and then there's been some other stuff that Luther's name has been sullied a little bit. But he has the support of President Trump and Mitch McConnell, and the mainstream Republican Party, and Roy Moore, like always, he's the evangelical candidate of choice, and the celebrities like Sarah Palin and Duck Dynasty guy, and Chuck Norris, a few others, celebrity Republican types are supporting him. And Roy Moore can win without usually whoever has the most money wins. I mean, it's not always true, but I'd say 9 times out of 10 in a race. But Roy Moore's shown time and time again he doesn't have to have the most money. I mean, he consistently get outraised and pull it off. There's been the whole hubbub about Trump coming to town, and I think Pence is coming tomorrow to help Luther Strange. Moore's had, Palin and the other folks that I discussed, they've been down here for him. So, the national polls are still showing that Moore has at least, anywhere from a 5 to a 10 point lead. But Strange was able to convince Trump to come here. And I don't think Trump, you never know with him, but I mean, I still think that, would he have come here if he didn't think there was a chance that Strange could win? And there was some controversy with that because he said that, well, if Moore wins, he may not be the Democrat, which, is a whole other interesting twist once we get past this. So, it's fascinating, and it's the national just because it is a special election is the talk of the country politics in terms of the electoral politics right now. And something I just read, and this is interesting to me, that, senators have been appointed and then have had to go into a primary. None of the incumbents that have been appointed have won in a primary election. I think it's been 5 times or, maybe it's a couple more, but none of them have won. So, I mean, that certainly bodes well for Roy Moore and Dutton, hold well for Luther Strange. So, you know, I mean, usually, you know, when an incumbent gets in a runoff, it's usually problematic, but even more so now that you're not a traditional, you know, incumbent, so to say. I mean, Luther Strange has won electoral, has won elections in the state, so, I mean, he's no stranger to campaigning across the state. So, I mean, that part's not unique, but, you know, the fact that he got appointed and then, you know, just a few months later had to run in a special election, I mean, it doesn't bode well for him, and I think it's going to be tough for him to pull it. I mean, turnout would have to be just amazingly high in the suburbs, you know, where we've got more mainstream Republicans, and you know, turnout would have to be lower in the rural counties where Roy Moore has his base. So, you know, I think, you know, my guts tell me that Roy Moore wins, but I, you know, special election and low turnout, so I won't concede anything at this point.
Yeah, so Mike Pence is coming. Wow, if you had a stack of free waffle coupons, the place was three-quarters full. With Mike Pence, you might actually fill it up. What a mover and shaker. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question before I pass this around to Catherine and Tim. Luther Strange, from what I understand, he kind of has two albatrosses. Actually, he has three albatrosses around his neck. One, there was the Bentley appointment. You mentioned that. Two, he has the support of Mitch McConnell, which will and can be used against him. And three, sure, for some reason, he has himself, because I found this out recently as we've been discussing this race, he's the last statewide Republican to be defeated by a Democrat back in 2006 by little Jim Folsom. What's his
right.
biggest problem with the voters?
Well, you know, I think that he's seen as he's, you know, corrupt. I mean, he's a political insider. I mean, he was a lobbyist, an attorney, you know, then ran for lieutenant governor, got beat, and then turned around and won attorney general. And so, you know, I think it's just, you know, I mean, he's just seen as kind of, you know, sticking his finger out and seeing what's the way the wind blows. I mean, he's not this, you know, he talks the Trump talk now, but, you know, he wasn't, you know, I mean, he'll say, oh, it was the, you know, behind him from the beginning. And I don't believe that was true. I mean, I don't know that he came out in support of anybody else, but he definitely waited to see which way the wind was blowing and what would benefit him. So, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, he's not I mean, Roy Moore is a true believer, you know, or that's the perception he gets in terms of, you know, his religious convictions and everything else. So, I mean, I just think that Luther doesn't necessarily, I mean, he's not a bad politician. I mean, he, you know, seems to connect well with voters, you know, better than, you know, I expected, you know, when he first got into this, but, because that's the way Folsom beat him. You know, they called him Limousine Luther and, you know, oh, Luther's at the country club playing tennis and that sort of, no, these are the commercials. And so, you know, he's evolved from that a little bit, but he's not your, you know, I mean, he may appear that way, you know, in terms of his positions, because he's just trying to win this race, but he's not, you know, he's not that, you know, down home, country politician like Roy Moore is. I mean, it just, you know, and so, you know, both of them are going to have problems against, I mean, I think Luther Strange would beat Doug Jones pretty handily. But I think Roy Moore is going to have a lot of trouble because, I mean, he just has so many people that think that he's just, you know, put a black mark on the state and, you know, with all the things he did with the Ten Commandments and fighting the same sex, you know, just in terms of the cost. And just that he'll, you know, he you know, anything, he'll do anything to further his own good. So, you know, I mean, both of them have baggage. You know, I think the problem is, though, that, you know, Luther probably is the best chance to – I mean, I still think that, you know, even if it's Roy Moore and Doug Jones, that Roy, you know, is probably the 70% chance. I mean, but things are – I mean, a Democrat has to – everything has to line up perfectly. I mean, you know, everything – all the stars have got to be aligned for a Democrat to win this state. And I mean, it very well could happen if you know, it is happening. If Roy and Doug are in a matchup, I mean, Roy will be drained of money. You know, the Republican Party, I mean, then they've got egg on their face because they went all in for Luther, and they've got to come back and support Roy Moore. And so how does that look? I mean, are they really going to be able to convince folks to to come out and vote. And Doug Jones will get, you know, these suburban, you know, in the Birmingham or Jefferson County, we call them the over the mountain Democrats, which are, you know, your affluent Republicans and, you know, in Huntsville and that area too. So, you know, cause that happened before. I mean, Roy Moore almost got beat for chief judge last time by, Bob Vance, you know, who was well known and, you know, his dad was a federal judge and had history, but, you know, I mean, Doug Jones has got a great story in terms of the prosecution of the 16th Street bombers and U.S. attorney. And, you know, for the most part, I mean, I don't think there's really any scandals. I mean, not that it's come out yet. I mean, I'm sure they'll try and drag something, but I mean, I think it's, you know, the right candidate and, you know, Democratic Party, if they put money into it, it'll be competitive. Now, I think it's still going to be, you know, difficult to get that. You know, I think he still right now probably tops out at 48-49% just because of the way that, you know, the voting demographics go. But you've got to have maximized turnout, you know, in the strong Democratic areas, and the Republican turnout has to be low. So, you know, I mean, Luther, I think the only advantage he's got is that, you know, he's going to raise so much. He'll have enough money, or they'll keep pumping money in. You know, I think he'll win. Rather, I mean, handedly, you know, 5-6 points, you know, would probably be the margin, I think, if it's, you know, Strange versus Jones. But if Moore, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a toss up right now, but it could be that way by the time we get to the special election in December.
Yes. Well, I'm going to go ahead and pass this thing to Catherine. We'll pass it to Tim for more Alabama political.
Hey, thanks for being on the show tonight. We really appreciate it. It's nice to hear about what's happening in Alabama, especially since it's so prominent right now. My question is about should Roy Moore get the nomination? Do you think that aside from the Democratic Party, but some of the other sort of active groups, you know, you've got the folks at Daily Kos who raised a lot of money for, like, John Ossoff, and then some of the other organizations like Planned Parenthood and, you know, some of these more progressive organizations. Do you think they'll pour money in opposition to Roy Moore and in support of Doug Jones more than would happen if it was Luther Strange?
I believe so. I mean, you know, Luther's just going to be your traditional, you know, Southern Republican at this point. I mean, he's not going to do anything crazy. I mean, he's just going to be a consistent vote for the Republicans on what they want to do. And so, I think, you know, Doug matches up better against Roy. You know, and it was interesting. I said the whole time that if Mo Brooks had won, I mean, you know, that would be the put up in terms of, you know, he didn't have the baggage that, you know, kind of in between the two of them in terms of the evangelicals and the traditionals. So, yeah, I mean, I think they will, but, you know, it's that fine line because, you know, do you want the taint? I mean, what's seen as the taint of, oh, the Democrats, the Nationals, Nancy Pelosi's, Obama's, you know, they're just trying to, you know, win this. I mean, just same criticisms he had. I mean, but Doug Jones, you know, I think he's been around a long time. I mean, he's entrenched. I mean, he's from here. It's not, you know, he's been very involved in, you know, the party, and also, you know, his story about, you know, prosecuting the 16th. I mean, that's just a lot of Republicans. I mean, it you know, it bodes well with them when you match them up against somebody like Roy Moore. So, I mean, I think that it's going to be like nothing.
Well, I'm not talking
before.
So much about – I'm talking more about, like, you know, helping with the GOTV and helping with voter outreach and, you know, like, because I think you're right.
I guess that's right. I guess how much help do they want, because they don't want to take enough where they can kind of cause this backlash, if that makes sense. You know, the same criticism.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying.
I mean, I think that's
we definitely understand what you're saying over here in Georgia.
No. I mean, I agree. I mean, I just don't know. You know, I think they will offer it. I mean, it's just a matter of – and I mean, they can do – I mean, you know, and there's no – the campaign doesn't have to say, yeah, we have, you know, want your help or have to work in concert. Of course, it's going to be better. I mean, they can do it anyways, you know, because there's so much hatred for Roy Moore. I mean, they're – not only in our state, but nationally. I mean, I think that there's so many people when it gets that close. That, I mean, he's a name that you know. I mean, it's a household name, not just in Alabama, but across the country. I mean, they know what he's done in terms of, with the Ten Commandments and his stances on, same-sex marriage. I mean, just all of that. Roy's a populist. I mean, there are, some folks. I mean, this has happened before that, in terms of on the Supreme Court, he was better for plaintiffs and plaintiffs' attorneys and consumers than a lot of the other Republicans are. So, I mean, that's one thing that he has going for him in terms of, in a general election. I mean, I don't expect a lot of, but I mean, he's still popular and he's still populist, and his message will change a little bit, but I mean, I don't know how much that would. I mean, I think they will. I mean, I don't know how much they're willing to put in. I mean, they've never really been willing to put as much in Alabama as they have in Georgia or North Carolina or Virginia. It's just, and I think that would have helped in a couple. I could think of congressional races where that kind of help in terms of the money and boots on the ground would help. I think maybe because it's a special election, it's not, you're not competing against other races, I mean, I think the timing's right for that to happen. But whether they'll actually do it or not, I mean, I don't know that the Democratic National Committee or those, I mean, they may. They may go all in, saying if we can pull this out, it's going to make a difference. And I don't know that it really changes. I mean, let's say he does win. I mean, yeah, I think it'll help the Democratic Party in Alabama, but I don't think it necessarily changes how difficult it is. I mean, Roy Moore is just the absolute perfect candidate to run against as a Democrat.
Right. Well, thank you for that, and I'm going to pass it to Tim. Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, good evening, Councilor
Weinberg.
How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm good.
For the benefit of our listeners, I want you to help us out here. Now, we know where the two big rallies were held in your state. First of all, why was Huntsville chosen for the strange event with Donald Trump? Why there?
So, well, I mean, I think there are a couple reasons. I mean, strategically, it was, very smart because Mo Brooks, the third place finisher, that's, he's from the Huntsville, North Alabama area. And I don't know I think he did endorse Roy Moore, but if I'm not mistaken, I mean, it's kind of been quiet. But, I think that to tap into some of that, is one thing, and I think you can because these are Huntsville, the median income's higher than anywhere in the state, and the education level is higher. So these are your Republicans that are, your fiscal, conservative Republicans, but that's where you're just going to have to make that difference. I mean, Luther's got to win in the Birmingham, Huntsville, the big metro areas, and so I think that the math helps up there, and also that you've got a lot of the big donor. I mean, the donor base is big up there in terms of the space and defense. I think that it just was the right right thing to do in terms of going after those votes strategically, geographically where you could get them. I mean, of course you want to come to Birmingham, but Huntsville just that's where you've got him. I mean, Luther's going to beat Roy Moore in Jefferson County in the runoff, but in Huntsville, he's got to get those margins up because Roy Moore is going to win those rural areas. Probably, when he did win those areas. I mean, I don't know how many counties Luther won. It wasn't many. And I mean, Mo Brooks, I think, did win Madison and maybe one other county up there, and it wasn't by much. So Roy Moore is going to take those rural areas, and there's just nothing you can really do about that. So. I don't think media saturation or anything would really help. I mean, that's my thoughts on it. I think it was, strategically, well done. And, if Strange pulls it off, I mean, I think that'll be the reason why.
Okay. And at the same time, Moore is holding a rally down in Montgomery. Now, other than the symbolism of that being the state capital, why would Roy Moore want to hold a big rally in Montgomery?
That, I mean, that I don't really know as much other than, you know, the same type of thinking that he's got to cut into some of the votes in that area that, you know, Birmingham, you know, he's not going to do well in the Birmingham area. I mean, it's just, you know, Luther's from this area, you know, grew up here. I mean, he practiced law. I mean, he's just, you know, well known. I mean, not saying that Roy's not going to get his fair share of votes, but I mean, percentage-wise, maybe they felt like that you could, you know, capitalize more in Montgomery. I mean, it's a little more hard to figure out than why Luther went to Huntsville, but, you know, why didn't Roy do it in Birmingham or you know, Mobile or even go back up to Huntsville? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that and I think Luther's having something in Birmingham, you know, but I don't know. It is a little more hard to figure out, but I mean, I think it's probably where they figured they could get some votes. I mean, and I don't know how strategic, you know, they are. I mean, in terms of their, you know, Luther's got all the big consultants and that sort of thing. I mean, I'm sure Roy Moore has some, but I mean, he's always not necessarily had to. So I don't think they're, you know, a lot of times they overthink it or, you know, just put everything out on a map and say, here's where we got to get this amount of votes. I mean, they're probably figuring they have. I mean, I don't think they have it in the bag at this point, but I mean, I think they're thinking they've got a pretty good shot of pulling this off. I mean, and I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I don't know what percentages, but you know, there's probably just not as much thought put into it.
Uh huh. Now I want to throw you a curve here because you have yourself sought political office in Alabama,
sure.
And so you know politics on the front line, and we have discussed a lot on this show about which state is most conservative, which state's most liberal, which state is this or that. Would you say that Alabama is the most conservative state in the South at present? Is that a fair assessment?
I mean, you know, it's probably so. I mean, I think, you know, the only other ones you can really measure it against are you know, Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee. But, I mean, I don't – you know, I think some of them still have some, you know, at least Democratic, you know, office holders. I mean, we have none. I mean, none on the Supreme – you know, any of our levels in terms of the courts, statewide office. I mean, we only have one member of Congress that's a Democrat. So, I mean, I you know, I think it certainly – is. I mean, I think it's you know, it's pretty much, you know, for all intents and purposes, a one-party state, and unless you're looking at, you know, Jefferson County, which is pretty much all Democratic, and you know, what are called your Black Belt counties, the, you know, the primarily African-American counties, you know, in the southern part of the state, you know, Selma and going to Montgomery and east and west a little bit, but yeah, I mean, I think it probably is. I mean, I think that yeah, there's certainly some progressive pockets, but you know, unless you know, somebody wants to make a case for Mississippi, and you probably can. I mean, I just think that it probably is at this point. I mean, I think that you know, we'll see what happens, and I don't know that it necessarily changes if we elect. I mean, I think long term it can have some value, but I don't know that it necessarily changes overnight just because we elect, you know, if Doug Jones were to win. I mean, I think that you know, anybody that other than Roy Moore, I mean, the Democrats aren't going to, you know, do any better than, you know, even with the perfect candidate, we're not going to do better than 45-46% of the vote. I mean, it's just
and
that much hatred and bad karma for Roy Moore, and not just, I mean, you know, a lot of Republicans that I know have talked to, the more mainstream, I mean, they're either not going to vote or they'll vote for Doug Jones. I mean, it's just, you know, the way it is. I mean, does that mean that they're not as conservative? I don't think so. I mean, I think it's just everything that he's said and done over the years, and people are just tired of it.
All right. And with that, I'm going to throw it back to David. David?
Yes.
Well, Martin, one final question that I had for you was on this rally, Tim kind of got into the politics of picking Huntsville. Well, even though it was in support of Luther Strange, the news coming out of it's not about Luther Strange. It's about his comments on the NFL and players in the NFL. What are folks in Alabama thinking that this, you know, was chosen as the site or the place to make those comments? Of course, knowing that Alabama per capita might be the the most red hot football state in America. Now, of course, I'm counting college in that, not
right.
Really just pro.
I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know that anybody, I mean, the hard thing is I don't believe that Trump just has a plan for when he's going to go on Hinge and say something like that. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, he just kind of says what he is thinking at the moment. Or I mean, if he does have a plan for when he's going to do this, I mean, it's well orchestrated. And I mean, I give him credit for that. I don't believe that that's the case. I mean, we've seen how he tweets and says stuff and, you know, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of things I've seen, I mean, people are saying, oh, this is, you know, it's like the schoolhouse stand all over again. I mean, and, you know, to come is just not in Tuscaloosa at the University of Alabama. It's in Huntsville. It's you know, it's just a lot of parallels towards, the craziness that's gone on here for years and years. And so, you know, I mean, I think, you know, the way that it's taken a tone, I think it could kind of backfire on him coming down here. Because now people aren't talking about Strange, they're talking about Trump. And nobody really remembers why did he come down here in the first place. So, I mean, I don't know that you know, it's really going to – I mean, that could back – not because he said something crazy, but because people aren't even thinking about, you know, oh, he didn't come here for Luther Strange. It's all the hubbub about, you know, Kaepernick and the players and – then they've started protesting, and so I mean that's going to dominate the news for the next couple of days. So, you know, is that not that he came down here for? You know, normally there would have been a day or two of coverage. He came down here for Strange and all this, or you know, Pence comes, or you know, whatever happens tomorrow. But it's taken away from it. So, you know, I mean, I think people here are people are sick of it. You know, the race in general. I mean, it's just been so nasty since day one. That it's just tuned a lot of people off. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's already shown that it probably wouldn't, if he wouldn't have said any of that, you know, I think it would have given Luther a bigger boost than it did. So ultimately, I just don't think it helps him because people aren't talking about it.
Yeah, I think the same thing. It was so mistimed. Well, Martin, I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. And
thanks for having me.
This election goes through December and it gets close with Doug Jones and the eventual winner, which I predict to be Roy Moore. I don't know about Tim and Catherine. May get you in on before the main event, if you will.
Yeah, no, sure. Would love to do it. I appreciate it. And we'll stay tuned, get some popcorn ready for Tuesday night. You know, it could be a long night. Be interesting in, get your popcorn ready till December. I mean, I don't think it'll be as interesting, you know, if Luther wins. I mean, I think he'll just have so much money, I think people will stay out of it. But if Roy Moore wins, I don't think we'll, you know, that race in Georgia, that congressional race, that was something, but this might be twice the fun. So I appreciate y'all having me.
Yes, well, I'll just tell you, sir. Thank you. When I was going to Gadsden from Rome, I passed one Luther Strange sign, one Doug Jones sign, and multiple Roy Moore signs. So Luther Strange right now is at the same level of popularity with yard signs. We know they don't vote.
Right.
Is Doug Jones at this point. So that really says about Luther Strange being the incumbent. But thanks again for coming on.
Okay, thanks. All right. Bye.
Thanks so much.
Yes.
Thank you.
Martin Weinberg of Alabama. Guys, I don't know how many topics we have planned out. We have one topic. We've covered maybe half of one topic, and then, of course, our guest, and we knew we'd have to talk about Alabama with the primary coming up. And, of course, Donald Trump's making more news. If you don't know, this is a podcast. Folks will already know it, but he's proposed a new travel ban while we've been on the show, added some new countries, including Chad, Venezuela and North Korea to the list. Who knows? But let's get into another topic, because I put it in the show notes that we talk about this, and I really want to, because it hits close to home, me being a teacher. A few weeks ago, in her classroom, a math teacher at River Ridge High School in Cherokee County, Georgia, Lynn Orlowski, she had, I think it was two students, I know it was more than one, students wore Make America Great Again shirts, which I don't want to get into a boring school law discussion, but I've actually studied the cases on how you can set your dress code, and it's a little different than free speech outside of, you know, in outside of school walls. But she asked those students to take those off, and she said, you know, that for a lot of people, that's like swastikas. And that they took offense, and then she, I guess, kind of ordered them out of the classroom. Administration had to intervene and said, you know, kind of you're outside of your power. Well, a lot of attention was given to this. She's been put on administrative leave, and she's a math teacher. She doesn't even appear to be that political, and she tells in her side of the story that there were a lot of minority students who they felt they might be affected and their families affected by the immigration policies of Donald Trump, the travel bans, and they, you know, really took offense to Donald Trump. I have a feeling there were some things besides just this one day with the shirts leading her to this opinion. Well, if all the administrative leave and with pay and all that wasn't enough, we have former guest and state senator from Georgia in the neighboring county, Forsyth, and who's running for governor of Georgia, Michael Williams, is planning a protest because he didn't like the response or the lack thereof that the administration gave him. So he's going to protest the school. People on the right-wing media have started calling for her firing. And, of course, like most states, Georgia's the number one – or in Georgia, education's the number one budget item. So teachers kind of, you know, want the backing of their state government officials in as many cases as they can probably get it. Catherine, what's your thoughts on this whole situation and governor's candidates protesting schools and protesting teachers?
Well, I think it's ridiculous that we should demand the firing of a teacher who sounds like she was trying to create a, you know, comfortable and, you know, compassionate environment for all of her students, which is sort of the role of a teacher. She knew that there was discomfort in other students. I think seems like a logical thing, whatever the t-shirt might say, I think. So that's, you know, seems like a ridiculous response. Seems to me that the proper thing would be for the administration to say, okay, well, maybe we need to talk about, like, what is appropriate message, what are appropriate message t-shirts to wear. And maybe talk to parents about what they allow their children to wear to school. But I think a governor candidate getting in there without probably understanding what the circumstances were is totally inappropriate.
Yeah, and there's a lot of creating an educational environment that kind of affects what you can have. I'll say, given the environment and probably the where Cherokee County is, the students were going to end up being able to wear the shirts, but the teacher, the way she had the other students' thoughts in mind, it's almost kind of bad that the students continued to want to wear them, even if they had the right to offend their classmates. Because really, honestly, among young kids that age, Donald Trump's not a real popular figure, even in outside of, you know, blue America, if you will. He's still not his Q rating's pretty low there. Tim, what's your thoughts?
Well, Williams was the first gubernatorial candidate to call for her fire, and saying she violated the right of free speech and the First Amendment. I don't know. I guess I could see it either way. But let's compare her to a substitute teacher up in Vermont the other day who was caught actually teaching a classroom full of students to do what? To give the Nazi salute.
Oh my
I mean,
God.
Even instructing them to say Heil Hitler while they were doing it. And of course, when confronted, the teacher said, well, yeah, I did do that. And they fired that teacher for doing that. I thought this teacher, you know, did the best that she could under the circumstances. I don't think she was making a political statement. I don't think she gave one thought on this planet to a constitutional crisis. She was just trying to keep peace in her classroom. Why would enforcing, say, a dress code be that much difference? That, too, keeps peace in the classroom. You have to have these sorts of rules. And if you wear something that offends other people, well, I don't know. It's an iffy line. Look, David, you're a teacher. What do you do in that situation? I don't want to put you on the spot,
want to talk about any, and I've never had a case just like this one with clothing and politics. But clothing had politics, but you put clothing and politics, it changes the complexion. But one thing you would do is probably if you had some divisive clothing that was not explicitly banned already in your dress code, but you could see it could cause mm-hmm. problems, you would go to your administration and say, this is what could happen. Now, I can't talk about when I was in school and not worry about, you know, that. I remember the Malcolm X hats were popular. You still had people wearing Confederate flags. You had the I'll wear your X, you wear mine. Well, they would ban, in some cases, I don't know if it was in my school or other schools, they banned both because they said it could lead to fistfights. It would disrupt the educational process. Well, let's uh-huh. say that the students that didn't like Donald Trump and the students that did started getting in fistfights, that would disrupt the educational process. Now, you could then mm-hmm. say, and I, you know, I don't necessarily want to ban clothing that doesn't have profanity or nudity or alcohol or drug messages on it. I mean, because I do think people have the right to believe what they want to believe. Even if I don't believe it. So therefore, I would say if there's some way, and they don't want to spend a lot of time in math class because it's really better in social studies, but maybe all those same students weren't in the same social studies class. But if you could say, look, you know, why is it that important to wear this? The election's over. Why do you want to hurt your people's feelings? Because I'm sure that students that think their family could either be deported, other family members looking to come in couldn't come in, work visas. They're worried about this. And so you want to have people kind of think of others. Because I know that in the context of bullying, Donald Trump's name comes up a lot in that discussion with how mm-hmm. we're teaching kids not to bully. And we got somebody in the Oval Office that people consider a bully a lot of times.
Well, if we're a political show, let's consider the political equation of this thing. We know what Senator Williams has asserted. Does he have a valid point?
I think he has a point to maybe want to talk about how students could have the right to wear what they want to wear, but to come out and physically protest the teacher, wouldn't it be better if he said, hey, I'd love to invite this teacher out for a cup of coffee, you know, somewhere to eat, and we can talk and maybe understand each other. Think about President Obama, there was the professor, William Gates, Lewis Gates, Henry Gates, somebody Gates, there's a lot of Gates. He was arrested outside his own home. President Obama, Joe Biden, had the police officer and the professor come to the White House. I think they all had a beer instead of a a coffee, with it being teachers and education and state senators, maybe they better stay away from alcohol. And they sat down and they tried to, you know, get some understanding. That seems like it'd be a much better thing. If you call it principal and say, look, let's have a talk and try to seek understanding, not seek attention. Which is what I think
which
you're
is
doing.
Better, but which is better political theater?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, and that's what we've got. We've got a lot of political theater. We don't have a lot of leadership. And one point I wanted to make, and I'm going to take a chance to make it, and I'm going to let y'all take a second. We're going to go over, and that's just how it is tonight, is one thing that I do find so troubling about what Donald Trump said is not what Donald Trump said. It's that people – some people on the right may start turning off the NFL and turning off the NBA, and then other sports like NASCAR, they may really follow along with Donald Trump. And there may be some people that are more Democratic, more liberal, that'll start turning off NASCAR. And we're going to have one more thing to divide us. One thing in sports that brought us together across the political divide. One thing we could share, and he's gone and ruined it. Or he's trying to. Hopefully he won't play with it. He's running it. And everything in our society is so divided. Which kind of grocery store to shop at? Which television program to watch? You know, it's every – what kind of music we listen to. And sports at least kind of brought us together. It wasn't – you know, you'd have Cowboy fans or Democrats and Republicans. You'd have Falcon fans, Warriors fans, whatever the case may be. But now we're going to have one more thing to divide us, because – if you watch the NBA, you must not be a good Republican. And if you watch NASCAR, you might not be a good Democrat. And that we just have got to get away from that, or we're never going to come together on as a country on things like health care, transportation, environment, whatever. So that's what I think is so sad about the weekend. Catherine?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I want to just say one thing about this teacher. I think it's a mistake to talk about First Amendment freedoms when we're talking about minors in school, because I don't think that those – I mean, of course they still have those rights, but I think that – I mean, you know more about it, David. You said you had researched it. But I just think that that's a little bit dramatic to say, oh, they're First Amendment – rights are being infringed upon. No, the teacher's just trying to keep peace and in the classroom. And it's I think you're right. She's a math teacher. She just wants to teach math. She's not trying to make a – I mean, I don't know her. I don't know the circumstances all that well. But it sounds to me like she's just trying to keep peace in the classroom and teach math to these kids. So I think we need to sort of recognize that not everything is a political – a political stance, you know, just because she asked that. I mean, she may have asked the same thing about a kid wearing a, you know, Obama y'all t-shirt, because people might get upset about that. I don't know that, but I just think that we sometimes tend to politicize these kind of things when they're really not political. It's just a question of maintaining order. And I don't mean that like law and order, but just maintaining, you know, order in the classroom.
Yep, when those kids are wearing khakis and a three-button polo that are all the same color, this is why they're going to get it. What are you going to say, Catherine?
Yeah, I just wanted to say something to Tim. Would you have ever been able to wear a t-shirt like that to school? We weren't allowed to wear t-shirts like that to school.
No.
I don't know. Okay, Tim, did you have a final thought?
There weren't a lot of rules on T-shirts when I was in school, so that one would – I mean, obviously, there weren't divisive – I mean, for people I'm sure had their strong feelings, but Reagan, Mondale, Bush, and Dukakis didn't elicit the type of response that Donald Trump does. Well, we've gone a little over tonight.
We didn't give Tim a last word.
No, I'm fine. We're great.
Okay.
David,
make sure.
Are you there?
We are the heirs of that first revolution.